Hey guys, welcome back to the Young Turks. Grace joins us, Grace Baldridge.
Hi.
I always want to say Grace Helbig. I don't know why.
It's fine. She's so much more successful and cool than me. I want to be mistaken for her.
Well, I mean, when YouTube decides like who they're going to promote like nonstop, yeah, they're going to be. I mean, she's great, but let's just keep it real. Like once they choose who they like, it's like
she is the chosen
Grace Helbig. Grace Helbig, and then right now it's Gigi Gorgeous. Like there isn't a billboard in Los Angeles that doesn't have Gigi Gorgeous on it. I feel like.
I think there is one, and it is for the movie Dunkirk. So those are the two things that we're talking about.
Don't call out my hyperbole. Okay, I do want to read some quick TYT lives. Daniel Pereja says, major sign of a sham democracy. Elections are run by partisan officials. I thought the US was the world's greatest democracy. And of course, that's a reference to the story we did about the Trump administration collecting voter information, and you know.
Yeah, and by the way, you know, we talk about that. The truth is that that is something that we scream from the rooftops that we have the best democracy, and our voter system is the best in the world, and our government is the best in the world. You know, we're big ones for being the best in the world. But the truth is, if you really start to look at this last election and the last few elections, you start to see, wait a minute. You know, this is a country that's got problems. If this were a third world country, you'd go, yeah, seems like a third world country.
I mean, yeah, and look, to be a little fair, I guess, to the Trump administration, I felt that these problems, a lot of problems existed even before he came into office.
Agreed.
You know, we keep bragging about how we're the land of the free. We're not the land of the free. We incarcerate more people than any other country in the world. In the world. Okay, that is not land of the free. When we have a bunch of nonviolent drug offenders locked up with insane sentences, not the land of the free. We are a punitive country that focuses way more on, you know, private industry profiting on top, you know, but instead of the best interests of, you know, our fellow Americans.
Certainly, but to a person, I think we're a charitable nation, meaning we're made up of people who our instincts are charitable and positive. It's just what's happened is that government and the corporate structure has run out of control. But on the election thing, I think Anna makes an important point. It didn't just start with this election.
Yeah.
Gore v. Bush probably was where you saw, wait a minute. So we're gonna decide this.
Yeah,
there's a real lot of crazy crap going on. And then this election is going to get decided by the guy's brother. And I mean, if you read about that in Ecuador or something, you'd go, okay, well, yeah, that's Ecuador. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that would be used as an excuse by, you know, the Pentagon to invade a country. Like, you know what I mean? We got to spread democracy.
Yeah.
Time to invade. Well,
that's right. Those elections need to be supervised. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's
all right. Sorry. Huge tangent. Grace, you're in charge of this hour today,
right.
So you take it
cool.
away.
Cool. All right. Well, we have a lot of a big variation of stories coming up, but let's kick it off with what's going on to the highest ranking Catholic official from Australia. So, Australia's highest ranking Catholic is facing charges of sexual offenses. Cardinal George Pell, Australia's highest ranking Catholic official, was charged on summons over multiple charges and is due to face Melbourne Magistrates Court on July 18th. Now, a comment from the Victoria Police Deputy Commissioner Shane Patton saying Cardinal Pell is facing multiple charges in respect of historic sexual offenses. There are multiple complaints relating to those charges. Pell is 76 years old and his responsibility is for the finances of the Vatican. He was appointed as a cardinal in 2003, and he was also the Archbishop of Melbourne, appointed in 1996. Now, he has openly said that this is not true. He denies all these allegations. He also says that Pope Francis is acutely aware of the situation. Pell spoke and he said, "So I'm very grateful to the Holy Father for giving me this leave to return to Australia. I've spoken to my lawyers about when this will be necessary. All along, I've been completely consistent and clear in my total rejection of these allegations. News of these charges strengthens my resolve, and court proceedings now offer me an opportunity to clear my name and then return here back to Rome to work." Just to clarify before I get a reaction from you guys, when we are talking about historical sexual offenses, that just indicates that these were sexual offenses that may have taken place some time ago. So I was a little thrown off. The term is a little clunky, historical
right.
sexual offense. It's not like he's assaulting historical figures or something.
Right, there's a constellation of complaints that have
yes.
now, that take place over a history.
Over a history that are now coming to light. And it was revealed in February of 2016 that the Victoria Police were investigating Pell over some of these offenses. I want to get a response from you guys. This is particularly interesting, especially because Pope Francis has said that he has a zero tolerance policy for sexual misconduct, and he has said that he really wanted to, for lack of a better word, sort of drain the swamp of a lot of the gross things that were happening in the Catholic Church. But now we're seeing from the highest order there are allegations coming out.
Yeah, so obviously the Catholic Church has been riddled with these scandals, and it's been happening for quite some time now. And you know, I don't know all the details of, you know, what he has been accused of, like specific details of what he's been accused of. And also, I don't know what evidence there is to, you know, find him guilty. And I'm glad that he will, you know, face the justice system, and hopefully justice will be served. I don't know whether he's guilty or not. That's what I'm trying to get at. However, I do know that the Catholic Church has a history of sexual abuse, has a history of covering up those sexual abuses, and it has been, you know, devastating for so many people who were victimized by priests, those in high positions within the Catholic Church. And you know, to know that this story continues, that more scandals are coming out and more victims are speaking up is really devastating. But I do hope that there will be justice. I hope that they will, you know, look at all the evidence and determine whether or not he is guilty of these accusations.
Well, there'll be a small J on justice, because when a guy's 76 years old and he's been put in a position of authority over so many children who put their faith in this man, and who are told to put their faith in this man, and are told that that man is closer to God than we are, and who's abused all that faith, then justice really can't be done, because that abuse is so toxic. Mm-hmm. It lives with those kids forever, for their lives. And so, of course, we can't know whether he really did it or not, but let's all just say, or I'll say it, I'm not surprised to hear the allegation.
Yeah.
And in that, I think you can read enough.
And you know, these alleged sexual assaults, some of them are from as early as 1976 to 1980, and then in East Melbourne from 1996 to 2001. So these accusations, you know, go back decades. And again, we'll see how it all plays out and what the evidence indicates. But it's just so sad to know that, you know, people in positions of power can take advantage of powerless individuals and you know, victimize them like this.
And also that for so long the authority of the church and its power went unquestioned for so long.
Yes.
It feels like this stuff is just coming out, and then it's like, oh well, maybe they're all making it up, or maybe just now they're feeling empowered enough to come forward, and they feel emboldened that people will believe them. Because before, we're talking about, you know, people viewed religion, especially the Catholic faith, very differently. It was not something you go against.
Right.
You know, the priest was as close, like you pointed out, it's as close to God as you will maybe ever come. And so that's an authority figure that you don't want to cross. So it is not surprising that some of these, that all of these offenses are historical sexual offenses, because a lot of people back then didn't realize that these behaviors were wrong. It was easier for priests to have this abuse of power, and that's why it's all coming out now. It's not that people are all of a sudden lying. You know?
No, but I'll tell you who did realize that these behaviors are wrong: the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And they closed ranks as an institution to protect themselves, as a political institution. The Catholic Church and so many religions, I mean, this just happens to be the one we're talking about right now, protect themselves institutionally. And so we saw them move priests who they knew were guilty of pedophilia. And we're talking about child rape. We saw them move them from parish to parish, from church to church, and they kept records of this stuff.
Yeah.
So it's an institution, I think, that you rightly point to, that is now being questioned institutionally, as you say. What about this Pope? He's supposed to have a zero tolerance policy, and this is somebody who's pretty close to the Pope.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is someone who's responsible for the Vatican's finances. I'm sure that's something they value very closely.
Right.
I mean, that makes this a tough pill for the Pope to swallow and for the church to swallow. So moving forward, I mean, we can all agree that this is a horrible thing. These are horrible crimes that have been perpetrated. And if indeed he is guilty of all these things, he's a despicable person. But what happens moving forward?
That's a great point, because I think that it goes further than, you know, demanding justice for those who have been victimized. I think that you have to fundamentally change certain parts of the Catholic Church to prevent this from happening in the future, right? And so, you know, in the past we've had discussions about, you know, this whole celibacy thing and how it just doesn't make sense. Like, I know that there are religious people who think it does make sense, but you create this weird environment where, like, adults are supposed to ignore their sexual urges and, like, be celibate. And then also, there should be consequences for people that were essentially hiding these things, covering things up. Like, why don't we ever talk about them, you know, being brought to justice?
Sure. If you had somebody in your family and you knew that they were raping a child, and the cops came to you, or the neighborhood came to you and said, hey, and we've gotten complaints that you know, your brother is involved with, and you said, we're just going to handle this as a family. We'll take care of it, and we promise. Well, you won't hear anything more, and we're going to move him to a different state. You need to work. No, you're not. We're going to come in, and we're going to arrest him, and he's going to go on trial. But for years, decades, it's been handled the other way. We as a family, the Catholic Church, are just going to handle it internally. As Anna says, moving forward, there's going to have to be an institutional change in the way these things are handled.
Yeah,
absolutely. All right, from that upsetting story, let's move on to another one. This one taking place within our YouTube family. Wow. Aspirations for YouTube fame turned fatal when Mona Lisa Perez shot her boyfriend, Pedro Ruiz III. This was all a part of a YouTube stunt for views. Mona Lisa and Pedro Ruiz were the people behind the YouTube channel called La Mona Lisa. It was a YouTube channel where they documented their lives in Halstead, Minnesota as teen parents of a 3-year-old daughter. Mona Lisa Perez tweeted about the stunt before it happened. She said, quote, me and Pedro are probably going to shoot one of the most dangerous videos ever. His idea, not mine. Now, what did this stunt consist of? What the court documents are saying right now is that Perez stood about a foot away from Ruiz and shot him with a 50 caliber pistol, which is considered one of the most powerful semi-automatic handguns in the world. He was holding a book to his chest. The book was intended to block the bullet. They felt assured that this would take care of it and he wouldn't have any harm done to him, but that's obviously not what happened. His aunt spoke with local news saying, I said, don't do it, don't do it. Why are you going to use a gun? Why? His response, she said, was simple, because we want more viewers. Now, there are real consequences coming to Perez as a result of this. Perez was arrested Monday on a charge of reckless discharge of a gun. On Wednesday, that charge was upgraded to second-degree manslaughter. She was released on $7,000 bail after her initial court appearance and ordered to wear a GPS monitor and stay away from firearms. If convicted, she faces up to 10 years behind bars. This is, you guys can probably tell, this is a really heartbreaking story to cover because it feels like this could have so easily been prevented. And the question that I keep asking myself is, for what?
I know.
For what?
They said it for views. It's so crazy, but they actually addressed that.
They have a 3-year-old daughter, and I believe that they had revealed that she was pregnant with a boy in May. And both of these parents are gone now. You know, mm-hmm. she could potentially be locked up. We don't really know. But right now, it's one of the most heartbreaking stories I think I've covered recently, because for what, Anna?
I know.
Why do you do this?
Because there's this environment online where, first of all, there's an environment in this country in general, regardless of what type of content creator you want to be, regarding fame and how awesome fame is. And we don't really discuss the honesty or the truth behind fame or what it entails and how terrible it actually really is, right? I think people are under the impression that as long as you do something outrageous enough online, you will become famous and all of it is gonna be good. It'll lead to great opportunities for you. And you know, unfortunately, in some cases, people act clownish. And they do become famous and they do end up making a ton of money. That whole Cash Me Outside girl, I don't even know what her real name is. She became famous because she was acting badly on a Dr. Phil episode. And then she started getting all of these lucrative deals as a result of that. And so I think the way that we celebrate people in the country needs to be like reconsidered and reevaluated. I think that's part of it. And I think that we need to have actual discussions with kids in high school about life issues that matter, right? Like we used to have home ec, maybe some schools still have home ec, but instead of focusing on that, maybe we sit kids down and we talk about like life issues that will actually impact them, right? How you're supposed to, I don't know, avoid doing things that could put people's lives at harm or at risk. I don't know, this is a devastating story. And I feel horrible for the victim and the victim's family, but to be quite honest with you, I feel bad for the girl or the woman who's now gonna face serious criminal charges because of what happened, you know? I don't think she's a violent criminal. I don't think that she's a person who's a genuine threat to society.
No.
And this is going to destroy her life. And I can't even imagine what she's feeling right now. She just killed the person that she loves, accidentally, of course, and it was for such a stupid reason.
And it was his idea, and he had assured her that, you know, that this would work out.
They had even tested with another, like an encyclopedia or something.
Yeah, and he claims that the bullet didn't make it all the way through the.
Yeah, so it wouldn't go through this.
So that's why he felt more confident about it.
And by the way, one quick thing I wanted to add, and I think this is probably the more clear point that I should get across. Look, we need to have discussions about gun safety. Okay, so I get it. You know, there are people who don't ever want to get anywhere close to talking about gun regulation, but this is not about banning guns. This is not about outlawing certain guns or certain magazines. This is just specifically about gun safety. Okay, can we at least agree, find a middle ground, and have a very important discussion about how we are supposed to act around guns. Guns are not toys, they're not fun and games, they're not supposed to be used for pranks, okay? We need to have serious discussions about this because people just think that it's like this cool thing that you can have fun with, but no, you know, you might think it's cool, but you gotta treat it like it's a lethal weapon because that's exactly what it is, it's a lethal weapon.
We may not wanna hear it, but they knew it was a lethal weapon, and that's what made this so intense as a stunt.
Yeah.
Most of the stunts, you know, Grace talked about the kind of the stunts that they were involved in prior. They did have kind of a YouTube following because they were teen parents and they were.
And they would do pranks here and there. Pranks like instead of a powdered donut, they'd put baby powder on a donut. That harmless pranks before.
Tame pranks compared to this. But it was the intensity of this that they knew would draw a lot of attention. And as Anna says, that attention is celebrated in this culture that it's going to be run on the news and all the local news stations all over the country.
Oh, and totally. Well, and here's the irony. This is why this is so unsettling to me because I feel like I'm reporting on an episode of Black Mirror. They got the fame.
Right.
They wanted fame. They wanted views. They wanted this following. And even though there's nothing they can do with it now and it's for a heartbreaking, tragic reason, they got it. And it just makes me feel so sick because it feels, doesn't it feel like an episode of Black Mirror that we're reporting on that we saw happen in real time?
Yeah.
Well, she's facing 10 years in prison, and we'll see how the case plays out. But I think it should be, in the very least, a cautionary tale for anyone who's considering doing something outrageous in the name of fame.
Yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, there are all kinds of stunts that don't involve guns that are life and death, and we've seen them have cost lives as well. It's you know, running across the train tracks at the last second, jumping off high places into, I mean, the YouTube has created and our environment has created the desire for fame. I'm talking about that environment, has created these weird scenarios, and people are looking for the next great one as they chase those clicks.
Right.
And so a lot of them don't even involve a weapon. Anyway, it is a horrible, horrible story.
All right, we got to take a break. So let's do that. And when we come back,
we're going to be talking about an imaginary ID law that a Florida cop pulled out of his ass, I guess. I was going to say where the sun don't shine,
holster.
But whatever, I'll say it.
The holster up his ass?
Yeah, we're talking a little bit about police, and we're going to be talking about medical bills. Yay. Mm-hmm.
Come right back. Hey guys, welcome back to TYT. All right, a few TYT lives for you. Virgin FJ says, addiction for fame from getting views is another mental illness Americans undermine. Yeah, I don't know if it's a mental illness, but I think people overestimate the positive side of fame.
I would qualify it as perhaps mental conditioning. I think that a lot of people from this generation, the younger generation, who are raised on technology and social media fame, you are conditioned to think that that is what you want. You want more followers, more likes. I wouldn't say that it's an illness, though.
Right, yeah, I agree.
It hits that same pleasure button that you get with any kind of other reinforcement.
Yeah.
Dances With says, the people I thought I could trust as a kid were police and priests. Then you grow up and put away childish thoughts, last people to trust. Yeah, and it sucks because, like, you know, whenever we do like a negative story about a cop, and there are a few in this hour, I always think about my sister-in-law, who's like just such a great person, you know, and she's a cop. She's great. She does her job appropriately. And I hate that there are like bad people out there that, you know, unfortunately sour it for everyone else. But there are cops you can still trust. Priests, I don't know. I mean, my dad's a priest.
You can trust my dad, but he's the only one.
Anyway.
But look, last thing on that, people with power, we entrust a tremendous amount of responsibility to. And when that responsibility is not respected,
I feel like we have to say the Spider-Man quote, with great power comes great responsibility. You were right around it.
I didn't even realize it was a Spider-Man quote. That's terrific.
all right, let's let's do more.
Here we go. A Florida cop cites an imaginary law while threatening a 21-year-old black man for jaywalking. It's kind of fuzzy here, but fortunately, Devontae Shipman caught the whole thing on video. Let's take a look.
What was it that we did wrong, officer?
You crossed. Take your camera and point it across there at the red hand. Mm-hmm. That is a crosswalk. One, you weren't in the crosswalk. Two, there was a red sign. You both crossed.
Oh, my bad.
That's a $65 ticket apiece. Get to my car. You are being legally detained. If you don't, you are disobeying. We'll put you in jail.
No,
go to my car.
That's against the law right there. You gotta see, look.
Look at me. If you don't walk to that car, I'm putting you in jail.
I mean, crossing the street, officer. That's
can I just get a warning? So you know, I'm just going
to get to my car. You're walk to my car. I'm about to put you in jail.
For what?
Disobeying a direct order.
That's not disobeying a direct order.
Resisting without.
That's not
walk
resisting.
To my car.
That is not resisting, officer. That is not resisting.
Listen to me. I am doing you a favor. I'm not telling you again. You got your ID on you?
No, I don't.
What's your name?
Devontae Shipman.
All right, so there's another infraction. In the state of Florida, you have to have an ID card on you identifying who you are. I can detain you up to 7 hours until I can figure out who you are.
Not if I've done anything illegal, officer. No, sir.
Yeah, that's not true. Florida does have a stop and frisk law that allows officers to detain individuals under criminal suspicion in order to identify them. But one, Shipman told the officer his name and date of birth when asked. Two, the stop and frisk law is not the statute the police department told the Times Union that Shipman had violated. And three, jaywalking is identified as a non-criminal offense in Florida code. So it begs the question, guys, is this ignorant or malicious? Did the cop not know the rule, or was he just going on a power trip here? What do you guys think?
I have no idea if it was ignorance or him being malicious. You can only speculate on that, and I don't even really want to speculate on that. What I do know is both are pretty bad. If you're a cop and you're ignorant of the laws, then how are you supposed to protect and serve? And if you did this with malicious intent, knowing what the law is and knowing that there are no ID laws, then I think that that also speaks to how you're not fit to be a cop, right?
I agree exactly with that assessment. It's unclear if this was him just sort of picking on this guy or if he genuinely thought that he disobeyed, but either way, that's awful. You don't know how to do your job correctly.
Give him a ticket for jaywalking. I get it. He was jaywalking. He shouldn't have been jaywalking. I do it too. If I were to get a ticket, I would accept it and I'd move on with my life. But why does he immediately start treating him like a criminal for jaywalking? Why does he, you know, make statements that imply that jaywalking is a criminal offense? It's obviously not a criminal offense. I think most people know that. Look, if there was malicious intent, I think he might have been banking on, you know, a young man who might not know what the law is for himself. And so, hey, let me just lie to him and tell him what the law really is and scare him. I don't know. I don't know what his intention was. Either way, You want to create an environment in which the people trust you as a cop, right? That the people feel comfortable calling you if they need you for help. And oftentimes when we do stories about the way certain disenfranchised groups of people react to cops, people will be like, well, why are you reacting that way to cops? Well, I would react that way to cops if they're lying to me about, you know, what the laws are, if they treat me like a criminal simply for jaywalking. And jaywalking is dangerous, whatever. Okay, fine. Again, you shouldn't jaywalk, but give them a citation and move on with your life, right?
Well, I don't even know that. I suppose you should give them a citation. I think you could have just said, hey, man, I don't, you know, sorry to bother you, but you jaywalk back there, and I need you just to know that we have a lot of accidents around here because people cross the middle of the street, and I just can't have you do it. So please, you know, however you want to say it. You don't want to say please, whatever. The whole thing when we joined the video sounded like he already had a head of steam. I'm talking about the cop had a head of steam going already, you know. Well, why don't you point your camera over there? But they take the camera thing, obviously, in an aggressive way, right? They see the camera going and they don't go, oh, great, you got a camera. Terrific. They don't view that as their YouTube moment. They view that as a problem. So right away, it was I think there was a friction, if I can just say, between the two. But then when he starts serving up like a short order chef, all this crap about the law, I think Anna's right. They were just counting on the guy not really knowing the law. But I just don't think they should be bothering people on this kind of thing.
Yeah,
and especially to this level.
I mean, you got people on bath salts in Florida. Like, go do something with that, right? Like, why are you're wasting resources and taxpayer dollars on harassing someone who crossed the street in a way that you didn't like, right? Which again is against the law, but it isn't criminal activity, right? And so it's just, I just don't understand what the point of that whole interaction was.
And no. I think that the worst adjective to describe this officer would be petty. You don't want a petty police officer. He has immense responsibility for protecting and serving the community, and he's just being a really annoying little bitch in this
right.
video.
Well, I mean, being annoying is bad, right? But it's a sad day in America when you come away from a story like this and like breathe just have like this heavy sigh of relief because someone didn't get shot and killed.
That's
right?
True.
So that's another sad part.
I'm not looking for the cop to be like a hotel concierge with the guy, but I am looking for a little less confrontation and friction. And I think there are a lot of ways to diffuse that. And we talk about that on the show a lot, you know, that these situations need to be diffused by the law enforcement officers. Now this, as Anna says, didn't escalate to the point that there was anybody being harmed.
Thank God.
Nonetheless, you can de-escalate even the initial friction, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, hey man, don't worry, you don't need to, but I just want to let you know, can't do that. If I see it again, I'm going to have to write you up.
I agree. Just a little sensitivity to the climate that they're serving in would be nice to see, and we didn't see that. So that sucks. Another police story. This one actually ties in very nicely.
Yeah,
good job, Anna. So according to a new, let me take that back. According to a new report from New York City's Civilian Complaint Review Board, NYPD officers are more frequently knocking phones out of people's hands when they attempt to record their interactions with law enforcement. So this is taken from a 2014 through 2016, the CCRB received 346 allegations of police interference with civilian recording efforts. The city watchdog, which is the largest police oversight organization in the country, was able to independently verify 96 such allegations out of the 346 made, or 28% total, the report says. As for the rest of the complaints, 52% were lacking enough evidence for the board to make an accurate determination. 11% of the reported incidences occurred but were found to be lawful, and another 6% were determined not to have occurred at all. The CCRB chair, Maya D. Wiley, commented saying, quote, technology has greatly increased civilians' ability to record and share video of police encounters, as is their First Amendment right. This has increased transparency and debate about safe and fair policing. As these recordings become more prevalent, our police force must be prepared for the profound ways that video will shape police practices. I took this story and this report as overwhelmingly positive because basically exactly what she says, everyone needs to adapt to this fair policing. But then it's so disheartening to hear that what should be, you know, something fair is being knocked out of the hands of civilians.
Right. And not only should it be fair, it's protected by law in I believe most states. There might be some states that have, you know, passed some laws to stop civilians from recording police officials. I know that police unions have fought tooth and nail in order to pass such laws because they don't like to be filmed, right? But my response to that is, you are literally a public servant, okay? You are paid by the individuals that you are supposed to protect and serve. And so as a result, you're in a public place. First of all, anyone in a public place, based on the law in general, has no reasonable expectation of privacy, okay? And so if you are upset that the individuals who are paying taxes for your salary are filming you working as a public servant, too bad, right? Like you should be able to get filmed, right? Like people should be able to film you. They should be able to hold you accountable. If you're worried by that, my question is why? Why are you worried about that? Is it because you do something that might be deemed, you know, unlawful or deemed an abuse of power? I don't know why else you would be so. If I'm out in public and someone's filming me, yeah, it's annoying, I guess, right? But if I'm not doing anything criminal or if I'm not doing something wrong, then why am I so concerned about it? And by the way, I'm not even a public servant. Like I'm a private citizen. You guys are public servants. Sorry if it annoys you, you gotta deal with it.
I've never had a police encounter, I don't know about you guys, where I felt as though the general disposition of the officer was that I'm paying his salary and so therefore he wants to in any way ingratiate himself to me. I mean, cops, when they stop you and when they interact with you, and certainly when they interact in this kind of, the sort of situations we see on TYT, they're interacting in a way that wouldn't suggest that they're beholden in any way to the person that they're
pulling over. I understand that. And by the way, I'm not saying that, you know, cops should approach everyone and with the intention of playing patty cakes. Right?
No, like, not at all.
But what I'm trying to say is, there's a certain level of transparency that is expected of public officials, right? Anyone who has a public job, any type of government job, there's a certain level of transparency. And it's because taxpayer money goes toward paying for those jobs. And so you see it with every, like salaries have to be disclosed, you know, a lot of personal information has to be disclosed because you are a public servant. So the fact that they're so up in arms about people filming them while they're in public is just weird to me.
No, I think you're 100% right. I guess what I'm saying is that there is a sense of authority that they have in every stop and in every interaction. And that in some way must be engendered there in the department because they've all got it. I mean, there are some exceptions and maybe there are many exceptions, you know, like they're extremes in all of these cases. Perhaps most cops aren't that way, but the ones we see and a lot of them that we interact with have that authority and they come at it from that sort of authoritarian disposition.
Yeah, and what I like about the CCRB statement is that what they're saying is transparency is good for everyone because if a cop is not doing the right thing, if it is not following the right procedures, then they should be called out and other police should be like, yeah, please, let's weed out the bad apples because it's making it more difficult for us to do our job, the really honest police officers, of which there are very, very, very many of. So I think that even though the CCRB is a watchdog organization, for them to just be like, look, this is, we need to make sure that there is transparency and that this will lead to fair policing and debate and safety for everyone. I think that that's really good that they're highlighting what their concern is. We're calling this out not because we're trying to just be annoying for the sake of it, because this is a major safety concern. And I think that they did articulate that very well, because a lot of people, it shouldn't be police against civilians. It should be us working together for policing our communities safely and protecting and serving.
It should be a win-win.
Yeah, it should totally be a win-win. It's like sometimes I think we sort of lose sight of what police are for. We absolutely need them to do their jobs well.
I agree. Yep.
All right. I think we nailed it. Every time we have sort of a conclusive end to a story like that, I just like things. So we solved it. You're welcome at home to the viewers. Here's another story.
There's plenty of people who disagree.
Here's another story that we can solve. About healthcare. Be interested to see y'all's take on this one. So a mother of a boy with a rare genetic disorder tweeted out her hospital bill. Allison Chandra's son Ethan was born with heterotaxy syndrome, which in short is a rare genetic disorder in which organs form on the wrong side of the body. She tweeted out her hospital bill saying, quote, "It seems fitting that the Trump care debate It seems fitting that with the Trump care debate raging, I got this bill in the mail today from Ethan's most recent open heart surgery. Now, if you take a look at that, you can see that she will only be paying $500. But don't worry, she's not going to make us do the math. She tweeted another thing. She says, I'll save you some math. Without insurance, we would owe, oh my God, that's such a big number and I didn't do well in math, $231,000 about for 10 hours in the OR, 1 week in the CICU and 1 week on the cardiac floor. That is a staggering amount.
Right.
And she also, you know, she's been going viral with this. She commented even more on top of this. She said, I didn't follow politics before November. I was overseas for both of President Obama's elections. I have been shocked at how loudly each side yells about their specific talking points. It paints these issues as black and white when they are anything but that. It seems like our kids are being reduced to a line in a budget. No one seems to realize there are real people behind it. She absolutely has made her point because people are talking. I don't know. I kind of disagree with one point here where she says, I have been shocked by how loudly it paints these issues as black and white when they are anything but that. I think that healthcare is a black and white issue for me. I think it should be affordable for everyone. Am I right. wrong in thinking that?
Well, it's really interesting because yesterday I was listening to Patriot Radio, which is, I know that we're on Progress right now, and I guess Patriot is the conservative counterpart to this radio station. But there was a doctor who called in and like her thoughts on healthcare are so different from the thoughts that, you know, we discuss on this show. She thinks healthcare should only be for catastrophic issues. It should not be used for preventative care. It should not be used for mental health care. It should not be used for addiction. It shouldn't be used for anything unless you have like something catastrophic happen to you. So if you have cancer, that's when insurance would cover certain things. And so the reason why I bring that up is because no, Grace, not everyone thinks like you. Not everyone thinks like us. There are people in this country, people who work in the healthcare profession, who think that, you know, health insurance should only kick in when it comes to serious terminal illnesses, which is absurd. Now, in this case,
in fact, the way to avoid these terminal illnesses oftentimes
is preventative care.
Exactly.
And look, one thing that I've always been super fascinated about is Cuba, not only for their men, but also because of their healthcare system and stuff like that.
And it humanizes us.
I know. And it's just interesting because, you know, back when Cuba had resources from the Soviets, right? They actually had insanely good healthcare. Now, of course, they lost a lot of resources because of the fall of the Soviet Union, but they still have the best preventative healthcare, right? Preventative healthcare is so important. It's so important. This idea that like you should, like, who cares about preventative healthcare, right? Let's just wait until we're all super sick and then everything will be great. No, it does. It's not supposed to work that way. The reason why people in Cuba, who, by the way, many of which live in poverty, the reason why their life expectancy is similar to ours, even though they don't have the same resources as us, is because they focus on preventative care. It's so important to them. So, you know, like, I love this story, not because of the tragic condition that her son has to go through, but because it provides some perspective. The Affordable Care Act is not perfect, okay? Mm-hmm. The Affordable Care Act absolutely does deserve to get criticized because for some people it has not worked out. It has become much more costly. However, there are a lot of people that the Affordable Care Act did help. And this is just one example of that. It helped my mom who had a pre-existing condition, chronic kidney disease. No insurance company wanted to cover her. And because of the Affordable Care Act, she managed to get coverage.
So that's one of the breakthrough aspects. Of the Affordable Care
Absolutely.
Act, the pre-existing condition.
Absolutely, yeah. And so, anyway, you guys jump in.
What I would say about health insurance, this is a really big topic. What I'd say about health insurance is these insurance companies, at their best, really do let you off the hook for a huge medical bill of the sort that we've just detailed. What's happening is that these insurance companies are beginning to back off on a lot of the things that they do cover. And so this is part of just a segue into a general discussion of what's happening. You know, insurance is something that we really have to have because there are so many health issues and medical issues that confront us and our families. But those things that are covered, the way they're covered, the way insurance companies push back on coverage, It's a real problem, and it's going to be an emerging issue in this country in a very, very short time. I mean, even a bigger issue than it already is. The number of medical bankruptcies, I think, has gone up by, like, I thought I saw 61% since the 80s. So these are people who you have to declare bankruptcy. That's the only way you can even deal with the medical bills. So facing catastrophic medical bills, the sort that Grace has talked about, well, that would easily bankrupt anyone. I mean, most reasonable middle-class people. So all I'm trying to say is this healthcare debate and the insurance company debate, it's part of a big debate and big problems that this country's going to have to face, and we're backsliding on them, I think, with every day.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bipartisan issue, and everyone needs to get involved. Okay, so last story.
Yeah, we have 5 minutes.
5 minutes for last story? Okay. Kentucky has signed a law allowing public state-funded schools to teach courses on the Bible. The governor, Matt Bevin, even participated in the bill signing ceremony, which opened with a Christian prayer. A little bit more about this bill. State Representative DJ Johnson said the Bible really did set the foundation that our founding fathers used to develop documents like the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. The class would be an elective, not a requirement for students, and each local school board has the option to offer the class or not. The ACLU believes that the U.S. Constitution's clause on the separation of church and state is the reason why this is not a go for them. The director, Kate Miller, says, quote, "We want to make sure that teachers can teach and make sure that they don't go in to preach." Though Mr. Johnson noted that the development of the course would not be unconstitutional, the State Department of Education will be the agency helping school districts develop the curriculum. The department, like every state education department in the country, receives federal government funds. So this bill goes into effect on June 30th, which is tomorrow. And I want to get a reaction from you guys. What do you think of this? Because I think it could be cool.
What?
This is how I think it could be cool as a Christian myself. If they are teaching about the history of the Bible and what went into it in the time period.
No.
Why is the Bible important?
We don't know about the curriculum.
Why wouldn't you teach the Quran, or why wouldn't you teach some of the other?
So that's another thing. No other religious texts are included in the bill. That's my issue with it. But if there was a class on biblical texts and the historical context behind how they were written.
Right, that's not what they're talking about though.
We're talking about freaking Kentucky. So we know what their intentions are. Okay, taxpayer money is not supposed to go toward endorsing a specific religion. That's essentially what they're doing here. Mm-hmm. You want Bible study? Cool. Send your kids to church so they can study the Bible.
Yeah, there are a bunch of them. I've seen a bunch of churches, even just on the drive here.
This is so absurd, especially when you consider the fact that the government is not supposed to promote one particular religion. They're doing that here, okay? Will this be challenged in the Trump era? I don't know, especially with someone like Neil Gorsuch in the Supreme Court. Would they even rule the right way? I don't know. I mean, I have no hope and I have no faith at this point. Fitting for the story.
She knows how to button it out.
By the way, what if your kids aren't religious, right? What if you don't believe in any religion, your kids don't practice a religion, are they gonna be required to take this class?
No, it's an elective.
It's an elective.
The way it starts, as an elective.
But would you guys be cool with this if it was multiple religious texts? If it was a course on religious texts, you can learn about who is writing it. I think the history behind religions has always really fascinated me.
Sure. Yeah. So theological history, whatever.
Right.
Okay, I mean, sure.
But if philosophy it is literally teaching from the Bible, like, did you know?
We're having a conversation about religion in our public schools. Can we maybe teach a class about financial responsibility?
Can we
teach a class about, hey, here's what you can expect when you go to college, here's how you can make some a good decision so you don't go into debt. Can we actually teach them things that matter instead of fantasies?
Anna, we're gonna teach them about snakes that can talk in gardens.
Perfect, okay, great.
Ethics, I'd love to see an ethics class. If you're gonna get into the whole religious thing, there should be an ethics class in high school,
I
think.
Exactly.
I agree with that. There are a lot of other very noble classes and electives that we could be looking into. I don't really think this is one of them, but all right, Kentucky has spoken. Live in Kentucky.
That's a fitting. It's great. Yeah.
With that said, that was the
what
second
bad
hour.
Things have come out of Kentucky? Yeah. I can't think of any of them. I really can't.
I moved here.
Wait a minute. I just thought of one. Okay.
I'm going to hold back.
Maybe in the post show we'll get into that.
All right. We will have a post game show for our members. You can become a member by going to tytnetwork.com/join. Also, real quick, I want to encourage you to go to shoptyt.com where we have a 4th of July sale. You know, just check it out because we have cool shirts and stuff and you want to wear them. Believe me. They're awesome. Anyway, thank you to Mark Thompson and Grace Baldridge. We will have a post game again for all our members. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.